Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Remember Thumb Blister, Stephen, from back in the day?
Those I do.
Are back.
You sure
those are. Those are back again.
Sure are. And don't worry, folks. You'll know why Andy is talking about that. We have with us this week, we have Eric Rosenlund, the creator of Slow Mole, a rage-inducing platformer for the Nintendo Entertainment System. That's right, the NES. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here because we have some bones that we need to pick with you. That's for sure. For those of you that are new to the Dual Screens Podcast, this is the internet's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. That's right. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a designer, a director, a producer, a voice actor, it doesn't matter. Everybody has a story to tell, and this is their platform to do so. The show posts each and every Friday on your podcast service of choice, including our home, Podbean.com. It's on iHeartRadio. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Stitcher. It's on Google Play. Anywhere you want to see it. And you can watch the video version on our channel at youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you want to get it early, you could go support us on patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, Vegas Girl on Fire, FNH Paul, and Colton, the Apprentice Nestler. Thank you so much for all of your support. We cannot continue to grow, and you guys have been coming out in droves lately. We've been getting a new supporter each and every show that goes up. We're getting a new supporter, so thank you so much. This is awesome to hear. But speaking of awesome to hear, this show is going to be fantastic because let me just tell you, Slow Mole is certainly an NES game. Okay, let's just put it out there right away. But Andy, I'm going to kick it to you for our ceremonial lead-off question of the show.
Yeah, I just want to know, Eric, why in these uncertain times you would create a game that would drive us further apart?
I never realized that's what I was
thinking. He's got a point. Eric.
But you can unify around your anger.
Yes.
We'll certainly all be in anger management. That is for sure. That is something that we could all rally around. All right. So, Eric, why don't you tell our listeners, what is Slow Mole? Just give the elevator pitch. I mean, they know is that it's an NES game as far as what we've told our listeners. So why don't you tell everybody, what is the game?
Well, it's a very, I think it's a simplistic platformer, but it kind of plays with the formula of a platformer, I think, because I was thinking, well, what happens, you know, like in usually in platformers, the character you control is fairly quick and jump, it's pretty agile, you know, but whereas I was interesting, well, could you possibly make a game with the opposite, like having the character, you know, the main character be slow and having like all the enemies like whiz around really fast around you, and what happens? And I found it quite exhilarating to play, like for example, if you like move over a screen, you can maybe there's some instances where you might have to like jump the same as a spider 4 times. Because it's just so fast, back and forth. So you have to like keep you on your toes, I think. And that's what I was going for. So I had to like, I came up with that premise and I tried to create a game around it.
Mm. Yeah, it's like playing Sonic, but everyone's Sonic and you're not Sonic.
Someone asked me if this was like a mockery of Sonic, and I said, no, I would never mock Sonic, but I would, you know, Sonic is fantastic, obviously. But this is something completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we mentioned this is an NES game. So can you explain what that means? What does it mean that you created a Nintendo game?
I decided to go for the 8-bit Nintendo because I haven't really done game design before, so I wanted to. I figured it was a good way, you know, like when you're learning new things, it's good to give yourself boundaries, and you know, like I'm going to do something within this space, and not so you can like you really have to you know, try your hardest to because it's so limited, like right. how many enemies you can have on screen, like how much graphics you can use. So you have to be really creative with all the pixel art and everything, because it's so limited. And that's what I found really refreshing. And I think you can really hone your skills by like giving yourself just a few tools to work with and do the most of that. So that's what I found appealing by me.
Yeah, we've had guests on the show before that have made retro games that are playable on those retro consoles. We've had Mega Cat Studios on several times, who have made Genesis games, NES games, and a lot of the times you find that a couple of versions of the game are made. One of the examples is Coffee Crisis. If you get Coffee Crisis on the Steam version, for example, or one of the newer console versions, there's more enemies on screen. There's some more colors. It's definitely run smoother and stuff like that. And then when they put it out on the Genesis version, you notice that there's way less enemies on screen. It's got a little bit of a slowdown. It's more true to, obviously, the console. But in the same vein, they are still looking at it philosophically from an old school perspective, because the limitations breed creativity. So what kind of challenges did you have when you're looking at this limited palette? What were the first really obvious challenges that you had when creating Slow Mo?
Well, it's like getting everything to work, I think. It was a major challenge, and I hadn't done anything like this before, so it was just, you know, like trying out new things, and like I've done a lot. I'm an animator, so I've done a lot of animation, but it's really fascinating, you know, doing animation with sprites, and you can only use a few frames, so they have to really pop. The frames, because you use them over and over again, and so it's really, you know, you can like spend hours just moving a few pixels here and there, and it's just, you know, it's got the complete opposite of a process of animation usually is, because animation is, you know, you create so much content, you know, and here you create very little amount of content, but in terms of the actual drawings, but you go over them again and again and again, which, yeah, might sound, how I say it, it sounds pretty dull, but it's fascinating.
Do you find yourself saying, oh, this is too much, I got to scale this back a little bit to make it fit within this NES box, so to speak?
Yeah, that's automatic, since you work for the actual hardware, you know, you're never in that spot. Yeah, if you were working on like a modern platform and wanted to do it in the style of an 8-bit game, I guess that would happen to you. But like when you're working on the actual 8-bit system, it's just, you know, you want to push it as far as it can go.
But does game designer you fight with animator you a little bit as you're creating the whole game? Like, well, see, this could look a little bit better with like 5 or 6 more animation frames, but it's a Nintendo game. I got to keep it really, really simple. How does the internal dialogue work as you're putting this thing together?
My game is mostly you versus environmental obstacles. So I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really constrained by cartridges or space of memory as much as like old games, you know, where they had to toss animation frames, because so I could actually have like an idle animation on my main character, for example, which you rarely see in NES games. So I wasn't. I could have even more animation, but that's the point, of course. I choose not to, because I felt it, I wanted to keep it like in the style of the platform, I guess.
You also had the opportunity, I mean, your trailer for this, I mean, you flexed your animation muscles for sure. I mean, it's like a claymation whole, like, intro thing, and it reminded me of 1991. Like, I feel like I was transformed back to like Nintendo Power.
Steven, this is like Ray Harryhausen, like Clash of the Titans type shit going on right here. This is like in the 60s.
No. I'm talking about when Nintendo started to do that, because Nintendo did that for the, what was it, the cover? Was it the first Nintendo Power cover was a claymation Mario for Mario 2? Like, wasn't it like a blue Mario on the cover, all in claymation?
That like sounds that, vaguely familiar.
That's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of like the late 80s, early 90s, where it was like, let's do something different. But you're just drawn to it instantly. Was that, why did you choose that for that? Was it like, oh, I want to do something that I know how to do? Or was there more into it? Like, what was that about?
No, it's kind of the opposite. I'd never worked in that technique before. I mostly done drawn animation. So sure. I think, well, let's make some claymation, because I've never done that either. So I really wanted to give it a go. I did look at some old, you know, video game commercials from the 80s and stuff, and so I, this is this kind of VHS look, sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
So the whole color scheme of the interior, like, right. It's meant to look like sort of like the early 80s, then like everything, but not too well built, because I find that it's in very interesting contrast. Like, of course, you could use like an actual NES controller and have like hands of plasticine bang on them, but what's the point? You know, it's more fun making one out of cardboard that looks a little bit off. So it adds to the humor, I think, when you build it in a way so it's obviously cardboard, but then you try to animate it as smoothly as possible.
So that actually gives me a little bit of a window into your psyche here, because one of the questions that I wanted to ask was, who hurt you as a person to make something that is so painful and difficult, yet so satisfying when you actually succeed? But now I think I know the answer. You just really like to hate yourself. You want to challenge yourself in ways that it doesn't make sense as a human, as a person who is as lazy as I am. Challenging oneself is foreign to me, but you seem to relish this. Is that not the case?
Well, I relish new challenges. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
You've never made an NES game before.
No claymation experience.
I'll make a claymation. Oh, yeah. Because that's what people do. They just wake up and they go, I'm going to do something I've never done before that people go to school for years and like do apprenticeships for and like get degrees and certifications. No, I'm just going to do it. Okay. Okay, well, Eric, but you show off.
I just haven't done like the plasticity.
I mean, it's amazing, and you know, you really did nail that whole 90s or 80s and 90s VHS vibe for sure. Like, absolutely, I was like, oh man, this is like, I could see this popping up during like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoons and Saturday mornings, and getting really jazzed about this mole game.
Yeah, I think this kind of game would have been impossible to make, though, because like most games had like an element of a power fantasy about them.
Yeah,
you know? like because they appealed to a young audience that wanted to feel powerful playing them, and this game is kind of the opposite. So I think you would have sold like 100 copies of something if you try.
I guess.
Walk us through the gameplay loop of slow-mo. There's a timer of sorts, there's a checkpoint flag. How do these systems work and play into the experience? What's the goal? What do you do
in this? Yeah, I think that's key to the whole experience.
Nightmare of a video game.
Yeah, the key to the whole experience is that the game forces you to essentially speedrun it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a constant timer ticking down, and you can keep playing even though you fail to beat the timer, but you won't get a checkpoint if you don't. Mm. So the only way to... You can get a checkpoint on every screen in the entire game, but you have to beat the timer to get it. Which means that you have to really master a screen before the game lets you skip it the next time the next time you play. You know? So, which to me, it's like I wanted to address this. I think, like a lot of games, I think you know, I can really master a section of the game, and then to the point of boredom sometimes, and then I start missing again on this that same section because I can't keep focused. You know. And I wanted, so I thought like there must be some way to address this, like so I made this whole speed run mechanic, and then it really adds a lot of tension to the game, I think, because there's like this constant clock, so you have to, and like even walking becomes more exciting just because you can see like, oh, this mole is moving so slowly, and like, oh, but how many seconds does it take me to get to the end of the screen, you know? Will I make it like in 3 seconds?
Yeah, I recall in our exchanges prior to this interview, I was like, oh, I'm playing the game, there's a timer, and I hit zero, and I'm not dead. And you're like, yeah that's right. And I'm like, the fuck does this timer do? I don't know what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, when you have those moments in the game like this, where you finish a screen, it's like, okay, I have to wait for this exact moment to jump that precision platforming section, and then this came after. It's like, oh, if I do it fast enough, I can leave this shit behind me and not do it again if I die, which is great.
Yeah, it's also a clever way of kind of extending the game's life too, because, you know, just getting through a game, a lot of the times we would get through a game and then we would figure out a way to challenge ourselves later, going through it maybe faster or going through it looking for secrets or whatever. This kind of gives you the ability to do all of that without realizing you're doing it, because if you're not doing it fast enough, you're going to go back and play these old levels. And then, oh my God, finally, I'm good at it. I'm really good at it. And now, oh, wait, I don't have to do that anymore. Oh, I see what's happening here. So now all of a sudden it's okay to fail because you're trying to learn the optimal path. And then once you do that, it's about executing that path as quickly as possible. So it really does help with the longevity of a screen, because, you know, you could go through a screen in a couple of minutes, or you could perfect that screen in, you know, 20 minutes, you know,
seconds. Mere seconds. Yeah,
I still find a lot of joy in like finding the optimal path through screens, and I think like if you do manage to play through the whole game, the game will let you play the harder mode, and you know, you get 1 second less on every screen.
I don't want to know what that's like.
don't do this to me.
I don't want to know.
I think that takes it another level.
How big is the hitbox on the mole? Because I swear to God, some deaths are just cheap. Like I clear the spike. I know I do. And that's like, I'm a dead mole now.
Yeah. You're working with a very an 8-bit system, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
It's a fairly slow processor, so it's always like this. There's like this hit detection if you're just on the edge of a spike or something. You know, it could be like, will the computer detect it just when you pass or won't it? You know, so there are like this little leeway that you can't really program around, because it's like in the nature of an actual 8-bit game, and the name of the game might be Slow Mole, but since there are springs and stuff, this Slow Mole occasionally moves really, really fast.
Yeah. When you're setting the times for the levels, or like, is that based on like you playing the game and figuring out how quick you can do it, and then you set the time, or do you set an arbitrary time and say, oh, that's too much time, I could do that quicker? Like, how do you make those adjustments for each level?
Yeah, it's adjusted but with a little bit of time to spare. Like if you play it on normal, every level is beatable on normal, but most screens you can you know, beat with a fair amount of margin, even on normal. If you when you play it on the harder mode, you still most screens are beatable. But yeah, it's That was one of the most fascinating things about designing the game was because I had to replay the screens over and over and over again while I was designing them to find the timing. But I think that's also a great benefit to the game because every screen really needed to be super fun to replay because that's kind of so I tossed a lot of levels that weren't fun enough to keep playing. So the ones that are still in the game are the ones that I personally felt were still satisfying to play.
Right. Yeah.
Were there levels that you were like, okay, this is just a little bit too much, but maybe I should keep it in there just to mess with people a little bit? Like, you couldn't beat it, but let them figure it out.
No, not really. They're like, they became a point where I where I designed a level and I tried it for 20 times and wasn't even close to beating the screen. Then I, maybe I should adjust something.
And he's like, check that one gets in there. So the game is now in beta. What does the full release of this look like? What can we expect when it's in beta?
It's a little bit rough around the edges still. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty much a finished game, the beta, if you play it. But you won't when you beat the finished game, you will be able to find challenge levels that are even harder.
So you can
enjoy those. But there are some very minor graphical glitches that sometimes occur, and the timer uses letters as well as
yeah, I noticed that.
Which is kind of funny. It's like a hexadecimal timer now, but I think we're going to go for an integer, with just
sure
numbers because it's it can be a little bit confusing.
I thought that was like old school, like Castlevania, because I think in some of the games they couldn't go do a level 10, so it was like level A. Because it couldn't count. It couldn't count past 9. Yeah. So now it's gonna put the letters in this shit. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's okay. We're counting down from C now. Interesting.
yeah, that's what I do. But I think I kind of like the letters, but I think I'm a little bit confusing. So probably gonna address that. And of course, there's going to be more music because now there are four chiptune tracks in the game, so we're going to have a few more. Mm. But other than that, it's a fairly, it's a fairly finished game already, I'd say.
Has anybody beaten a level in an unintended way? Like, you've seen somebody just beat a level and you're like, whoa, I didn't expect somebody to do that, but okay.
Yeah, sure. When we were testing the game earlier. Yeah. That sometimes happen, but that's just refreshing, that's okay. Someone found an unexpected shortcut that makes the game only better, I think.
So you pull out, then you pull it out immediately.
So I was just going to ask, do you leave those in? Do you leave the those types of levels in the game? So if somebody else could figure it out, great.
Yeah, sure. There's at least one screen I know that I think you can clear it by 6 seconds if you do the shortcuts on the normal difficulty level.
How does the game get more difficult on the difficult playthrough? What are you adding into the game?
Oh, it affects the timer.
So it's just the timer thing. Okay.
The whole game is based around speed running. I think the timer makes a huge difference on how it feels to play it, really. And that's what I found so interesting. Also, keep playing myself when you're beating the game and keep playing it on the hard difficulty, because you force yourself to find new ways to play the same level that you already thought you knew, but you find new mechanics and new nuances to the mechanics that you didn't know were there. Maybe you can jump twice but not as high and clear that spider and something, in a way that you didn't think was possible. But it's really refreshing to find those and satisfying.
I was going to say, I was going to add more spiders to make it harder.
Well, this is like an 80s game, and this is like, yeah. You can't add many more enemies because it will just slow down.
No.
You're very limited to the amount of enemies, so you don't have to worry about that.
When can we expect a physical release? Because this screams, I need a cartridge. And just put this in my actual NES system at some point. It just feels wrong not to do that at some point in my life. Yeah, when is that going to happen?
We actually ordered, we're waiting for to get the first prototype cartridges back. Mm. So they're already being manufactured. So nice. Of course, that's on the beta version. But so we're going to test those out in next week, I think. I think we'll get them. About the middle of next week, I expect. So that's going to be, hopefully amazing and everything works because we designed the actual PCBs ourselves. Mm. I'm working with a friend of mine. It works with hardware design, so he drew it himself. So it's going to be really exciting to test out.
And that's so cool. Like, because we talk about the games who try to make a retro-inspired game or to get their game on a Nintendo system, like a Switch. This is, you made an actual Nintendo NES game. That is just so cool to me. I can't, that's never going to not be cool in any way, in any reality to me. It's just so cool.
I'm surprised myself. If I went back a year in time, I would never have thought that I would have made them pretty much a finished NES game right now.
I wonder, or claymation for that matter,
or claymation, or a dumbass podcast, you know? I wonder if you could get this at the official Nintendo seal.
Oh my god!
I wonder if they still do that for NES games. Like,
you should reach out to some people and just be like, "Hey, just get that gold stamp on there, make it nice and official looking."
Because if you could be part of the official NES game collection, you know, because there are collectors out there that want every single game for the NES. Like, there are people out there, and like these third party games that came out much later, they don't necessarily count towards the collection because they're not like the original seal of approval thing. So maybe, I don't know, maybe there's conversations to be had. Mr. Nintendo, are you listening? I know Reggie. Yeah. I know Reggie's no longer with you guys. I know he's over there dropping stonks and, you know, I don't know what he's doing over there, but Bowser, are you listening, Bowser?
Oh yeah, that's the guy's name.
His name is Attic Shirley Bowser. That's correct.
It's real.
That is correct. What kind of games did you grow up playing, Eric? Like did you play games like this growing up that you just like fell into that and wanted to make that, or was it? Did you play different? What kind of games did you play?
Yeah, I did. I think I didn't actually have an 8-bit Nintendo when I was growing up. Which is
that's fascinating.
That sounds sad to me.
So
I had like a Commodore 64, and then I had a Sega Master System, and
you made a big jump.
Mega Drive and a Super Nintendo, but I actually missed that was I should have gone for the 8-bit Nintendo, but
So
I feel like that now.
So hitting that look and feel really is just because that's what you're making. Like you didn't have a preconceived notion of what this game is going to look like, how it's going to play and all that stuff. Like you had an idea of what kind of game you wanted to make, but like actually fiddling with the hardware is what dictated what this thing looks and sounds like. Like you didn't have anything in your mind of what this is going to be.
Yeah, to some extent, but I think I decided to not follow some of the norms that most Nintendo games do, for the sprites, for example, usually have like a black outline, so they pop versus a color, like a detailed background, where I choose to mostly have a black background with minor details. So I could actually make the mole is gray with a blue nose. So he doesn't have a black outline, and so I did which makes it somewhat more similar to games on other 8-bit systems, like older 8-bit systems, like the Atari 2600 and like Commodore 64 and those type of games. Whereas Nintendo games usually had like more detailed backgrounds and a different kind of style. So, but I think that was also interesting to me that working with the hardware. I think when people actually were making games, they were looking at each other and you know, learning from each other and using similar kinds of methodology. But like when you come in from later on and just look at what you can do, you might do something different. Like, and that's also what I found interesting. Like you don't have to make it look like every other 8-bit Nintendo game and make it look like its own thing, while still keeping true to the system, I think.
Mm-hmm. Are you in this now? Because, you know, you can say animation background, you did a video game, it's really, really cool and fun to play sometimes. Do you see yourself now like leaning into game design as a viable career path? Like, do you want to do more of this?
Yeah, or just... definitely. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this was it's a real, you know, one of the difference. I've made films before, like a lot of short animation films and that kind of thing, but which is really satisfying. You can get a fantastic reaction from the audience, but one thing you can never do as a filmmaker is really fully appreciate your own work. Mm. Whereas when you make a game, you can play it yourself, and it won't, you know, you don't know exactly what's going to happen just because you made it, because it's
right
dictated by the mechanics. You know, it doesn't matter that I made the game, I still have to play it like everyone else. That's something I found really refreshing. You can actually appreciate your own game in a completely different sense than you can your own film, for example, which is amazing, I think.
And be surprised by it too.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah.
I didn't know that before.
You can't, like, it's a set of systems, you know, that you created, but you can't dictate what happens within those systems. Mm. So it will keep surprising you, and that's really, you know, that's so refreshing as a creator, I think.
So how did you get into this? How did you decide, you know, I want to make a game? Like, what was that like? What, take us to the genesis of that.
Yeah, well there were like up and coming tools to work with. I got a tool called Nestmaker.
I backed that on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you backed that. Good. Yeah. And that wasn't really like the version I started working with wasn't really finished, but you know, so it was like you had to learn code as well. So, which was great because that made you know, like you learn as you go, and then you create your own thing, you know, because like the only way to work to really create a game for this type of platform, you really have to get into the coding aspect of it as well, I think. And that was I have done programming before, but that was a long time ago, so I was also really, you know, I wanted to get back into that because I kind of missed coding. So that was also an opportunity, you know. And I never coded anything assembly language before. So it was fascinating to learn a bit of that.
So this kind of just was a curiosity in a way. It was...
Yeah, yeah. This game really, I had another idea for a completely different game, but I thought of like, I wanted to learn the tools first. So I started making... like this game, to just, you know, try out, and then but then I thought that, hey, this is, you know, this is pretty good, so maybe I'll make something of this first.
Do you see yourself moving on to like a more complex engine, like a Unity, in your next game would be, or you want to stick to this format?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think I'll probably I want to explore this a bit more first, I think. But certainly, I can imagine myself working in another engine, for more modern systems as well. But yeah, I think I want to explore this a little bit more fully, or if you ever can explore anything fully, like in programming, but like a little bit more. I'm not ready to move on just yet, ideally we'll be able to release this game on other platforms as well. So we'll see what.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's almost like you kind of went in a little time machine, but you took some technology back with you. But you're like, hey, I want to start making games, but I want to start the right way. Let's go 35 years in the past and start making games like that. And then just kind of slowly, like you got to make something for Game Boy, you know, Game Boy's got to be up there. Like, because that's even more restricting, because then you only have his green and gray. Like, that's, there you go. you know, your Super Nintendo, like you, the whole world is your oyster, Eric. You can do anything now. You have 35 years of gaming to explore. Yeah, don't jump to Unity. Leave Unity alone.
I want to see slow-mo 3D at some point.
Hell yeah.
But make it like a PlayStation 1 Bubsy kind of joint.
Oh, I was going virtual, boy. I was going virtual, boy.
Oh, wow.
Make something. Why? That's going to make... Because this already makes my eyes bleed.
Hurt my eyes and my fingers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you could get yourself a dev kit for a virtual boy, that'll be the thing there. But just think about it though. You'll be making an Unreal 3 game 30 years from now.
Yeah.
You'll have reached that point.
True.
And it'll be great. Tournament. We'll need a PS3 emulator or whatever, PS4 emulator. I think that's dope.
You should like unlock a gun at some point in this game. When you get that far along, if you beat all the shit, get a gun to shoot the spiders. That's my idea. That's my contribution to the game. Yeah.
And that's why you don't make games.
My mind, but that's for another game, I think.
Yeah, that's for part three. That's for the 16-bit era when things got a little edgy in like 1994. You know, that's when that Earthworm Jim, like that's when Earthworm. Ooh, maybe Earthworm Jim can meet Slow Mole. Think about it, both in the ground and stuff. Although the creator of Earthworm Jim's a little Looney Tune, so maybe you don't want to.
It seems just right.
Maybe you don't want to go down that road. So who else is making? What is it? Just you? Is there a team, or do you have people that you're working with? Like, what's the relationship like?
It's pretty much just me. I had a little bit of help with a friend who's also doing hardware design, and so I had asked him some coding questions from now and then because he's very good with assembly coding. But other than that, it's me and of course just a composer who did the soundtrack, and that's it.
God, I can never, man. Every time I hear that, that's just one person doing something like that. It makes me think, oh yeah, okay, cool. You know, I could do something like all of you aspiring, you know, game makers out there. Yeah, you can probably do it, but it also scares the hell out of me. Just knowing all of the things that you guys have to learn. Yeah. How long ago did you start this process of getting NES Maker?
Yeah, I think that's really surprising to me because I think I actual game I've only like was it about a year ago, I think.
Wow.
So it's been a much faster process. Of course, I sort of made it my full time job. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But I make animated short films mostly. Mm-hmm. So I'm used to like investing in my own projects and investing in time to work on my whatever art project I'm working on. So now and then I just made this my project after, you know, discovering that's what I wanted to do. So I had the opportunity to do that, which was great. So that's also why I said like I'm so surprised. I'm a bit shocked actually that I've gotten to this point because I would never have expected that a year ago.
Do you see yourself continuing down this path as a solo dev, or do you see maybe, you know, moving on to getting a small team together to kind of get more creative minds in there, or get some more hands in the cookie jar, as it were.
I could definitely see myself doing this with a few more people. Definitely.
Sure.
Because it's like, you can do more things, really. Like it's like, when you make animated films and it's just you sort of, there's a limit to how much you can do. So right. You can make fantastic things, but you need to like have a very, very strict limits on what you mean. Whereas if you when you shoot a film with a bigger crew, you can actually make a much bigger film. And some stories require like a more people working on it to make it come to fruition. You know, so and that's, I think it's the same for game design. This particular game. It's a game like that one person can make, but not all games are like that, and
sure.
And not all ideas fit into that mold. So I think I could definitely go for working with more people.
What would you name your game studio? Have you thought about that before?
No, I need to come up with a name. Yeah.
Mm.
Hmm. Now it's just my name.
Gotta think of a few names here, Steve.
I think we'll be able to find some. in our next segment, I feel like we're gonna have plenty of possible names. Andy, do you have any questions before we get into rapid fire?
No, that was the last thing I wanted.
Okay, beautiful.
We're going to rapid fire.
All right, Eric, it's now time to get into rapid fire. This is the segment of the show where we're gonna ask you a bunch of stuff, and we want to get your off the cuff answers here. We want to know what makes Eric tick.
Eric,
you know what I mean? We want to know what makes you, you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start off with a nice softball, nice, easy toss here. Pineapple on pizza. Yes or no?
No.
Okay. It's simple. Very See, nice. Look at that. Boom. Simple answer. It's the wrong answer, but it's a simple answer.
That's the correct answer.
Well, whatever.
If you could use a time machine that could only go back in time or forward in time, which one would you do?
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm so curious. I'm going to go forward.
Yeah.
If you can explore a faraway solar system, like a faraway planetary system or galaxy, as it were, or an unexplored, deepest, darkest part of the ocean with no risk, you'll survive, the technology's there, which one would you do?
I'd go for the galaxy.
It's good.
It's very good. Would you rather invent something new or discover something new?
Ooh.
Oh. Mm. Invent something new, I think.
Mm. Mm. Breakfast cereal and milk. Is it a soup?
No. I would prefer yogurt.
Okay. All right. You prefer, I mean, you're kind of you're dodging the question here. Is a bowl of cereal with soup in it, I mean, with milk in it, does that make it a soup?
No, I don't think so.
All right, whatever.
But I don't need the kind of cereal you do.
No, nobody does. We really love to just put ourselves in the hospital. Andy, next question.
Always. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Oh, flight. Definitely. No contest.
Would you rather have the ability to travel anywhere in the world instantly or anywhere in time instantly?
Oh, yeah. Anywhere in the world, I say.
Yeah. Too much responsibility to be able to go around town Doctor Who, you know?
You can mess so much up if you're traveling time, I think. Yeah. I don't want to take that risk.
That sounds like a nightmare. You're right. I mean, forward, maybe.
Confusing as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're going to bump into yourself, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Andy?
If Slowmole was announced as the next character for Smash Brothers, what would his final Smash look like?
Oh, yeah. That's, I can't think of a moveset for him because he's, you know.
I got it. I just got it right now.
Maybe some strings and jump on. Yeah.
That's fine. Totally fine. But I think it's him walking slowly towards you, and it's so slow, the other opponents die. Wait for him to get there.
He just kind of slowly lumbers across
slowly
the screen.
Walking,
but you know what, like, you could do though is like the camera could start to pan in, and so he's taking up more of the screen, and the other players can't see how to get around him, and then he just eventually touches them and they die. It's like a 4 minute final smash.
Oh my god, yes, that'd be amazing.
No, if you have a counter there, a counter that ticks down the second, so you have that suspense.
Nice, there you go.
And it counts down from C, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Your significant other gets a text that you have been arrested and thrown in prison. What was it for?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I don't know. Skateboarding in traffic, maybe?
Okay, they're going to chuck your ass in jail for skateboarding in public. Right in the street. I get it.
Interesting. Okay.
Radical.
When you're getting dressed in the morning, Eric, and you're thinking about levels to put into Slow-Mo to drive me slowly insane, and you have your socks and your shoes beside you as you're getting ready, do you put them on sock, sock, shoe, shoe? Or sock, shoe, sock, shoe?
Yeah, the thing is, I would never keep my shoes by the bed since I'm Scandinavian, so we keep our shoes by the bed. It's obvious sock, sock.
So it's always sock, sock. See, this is why.
No shoes in the house.
Yes. I don't understand this.
I wear shoes all the time.
Why? In the house?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't get that.
I don't like having cold feet. I don't care. I clean my floors. It's all good.
I don't know. It's like, why would you do it to yourself?
I don't know. Eric, describe your perfect evening.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Cooking a nice dinner for the kids, I guess. And having a good time, I guess. And having time to actually do something together. And besides going back to work afterwards, that would be perfect.
Sure.
What do you think people notice most about you?
I don't know. Well, I think I can be a very enthusiastic person about a lot of things. So I think I hope that's what they notice.
If you can have dinner with one historical figure, who would that figure be?
Oh, let's see. Would I be, we'd have to like speak the same language?
All those modifiers,
Yeah.
It just happens, because you're there.
Like choose like some really significant person and they live like thousands of years ago, so there isn't even a common language.
There's a language barrier. Oh, shit.
Yeah, that would be really boring. That kind of a wasted opportunity. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, I'll go for Leonardo da Vinci.
That's a good one. That's a very good one. Absolutely.
I see that. What is a ridiculous thing someone tricked you into doing besides me getting you on this podcast?
Oh, wow. I don't remember. No, that's difficult. I tend to
do a lot of stupid shit. Is that what you're trying to say?
I hope I don't dwell on it. So I'm sure I've done a lot of stupid stuff, but yeah.
Speaking of stupid stuff, what's the dumbest way you've injured yourself?
I love this question so much.
Yeah, I was I'm not sure that was the dumbest way, but I was riding too fast on a skateboard last summer, and I sort of and I was on this on this road where there usually isn't any traffic, and then suddenly there was a bus on the opposite side when I was doing like this really wide turn, and I realized, hey, I'm not gonna, you know, I'll better jump off the skateboard, because you just do it automatically. So I sort of injured myself a little bit.
Goodness.
I was perfectly safe, but you know.
That was close. That was a close call.
Jump off the skateboard.
And then they arrested you.
And then they arrested you. Yeah.
That's why. Likely, yeah. I don't think it's probably legal to go. It's not a crime, I think. But
Speaking of jail time, would you rather have one real physical get out of jail free card that will get you out for any crime you ever commit, including skating and traffic, or have a key that could unlock any door in the universe?
I think I'll go for the key.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I don't have a bloodlust. I feel like murder would be the only thing I would want to get out of jail free for, but then that would just drive myself crazy knowing that I killed somebody. That's just like, but the key thing, I would like almost never use it. It'd be like, oh God, what's going to happen? Like, I'm scared. This door, what's behind here? I don't know.
I think I use it to like, I think the lock on my son's bicycle broke, so we have to sort of force it open. So I could use it to.
Oh, good. Yeah, there you go.
Unlock his bike. That would be great.
You have discovered in your backyard dinosaur fossils. It has never been discovered. This species is completely brand new. And they ask you, Eric, it's your discovery. You have to name it. What do you name your discovery?
Oh, wow. I can't name it after me. That would be
you could.
Silly.
You absolutely could.
Yeah. And I have a three children, so I can't name it for one of them either.
No, smash them together.
Oh yeah, take the first letters of each.
Yeah, just make it. Few letters. Know, most of these names don't make sense, so just you know.
Wouldn't that be great though? Like in a museum, here's the Tyrannosaurus and the Stegosaurus and the Eric.
Here's the Eric Andy Steven.
The Molosaurus.
That's not bad. The people look at it and go, oh, he must have been a subterranean. No, it was actually a flyer, but he was making a game about a mole at the time. So he went with Molosaurus. Okay, fair enough.
You know, by the way, you need to like talk to Google about getting the word slow mole to get your game like up in the search results, because it was all mole recipes for the first two pages.
I love a good mole though.
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny. I love mole, so that's brilliant. You only get slow mole when you search for slow mole.
Boy,
but how to make a mole in a slow cooker? Got it. That's awesome. I know how to do it now. At least,
yeah,
I do. I don't know how to beat your game, but I know how to make a slow mole.
You do.
You really do.
That's some comfort when you don't beat the game. You can have a slow mole.
what'll be done first? Me playing the game or the slow mole?
I don't know. I think it's the slow mole. That's what I'm putting my bets on.
Yeah, I'm very bad at video games. Andy, what's your next question?
What is your favorite smell?
Oh.
Let's see. Yeah. I don't know. That's going to be like a newborn baby or something.
Wow. Yeah. It, you know, Are we going before the first bath? Are we going?
But afterwards.
I think that's a good call.
Fresh newborn baby. Yeah. That's sour milk newborn baby.
Yeah.
They have their own individual smell.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Because they yeah. Sure. No, I'm with you on that.
That's sweet. I like that answer.
Mm-hmm.
I was good at food. That's where my first thought goes to with that question. It's like bacon.
Bacon. Oh my God. Yeah.
Crack
that's on another bacon. Level, bacon.
If you could have a smell, like it's your custom smell that whenever people are around you, that's what you smell like, what would you want to smell like?
Oh yeah, I think everyone has a custom smell already.
I mean, mm-hmm. Sure, but like you could choose it this time.
Yeah, but I think better not. You know what are you going to choose? Like
lavender,
cinnamon,
citrus.
No, that would be so artificial. People would,
why do you smell like citrus? It's just what I do.
You want the pheromones. You want that natural musk.
What if that is your pheromone? What if your pheromone smells like
lilacs?
Is lilacs, yeah, or like, yeah, sunflower seed oil? Like that's what I smell like. That's weird. Andy, next question. We got a couple more. We got time for a couple more questions, Andy.
Very oddly specific.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
If you had a mole as a pet, what would you name it?
Slowly, then.
Slowly. I like it. This is one of Andy's questions that I really like.
Okay.
Would you rather have hair made out of spaghetti that always grows or sweat that is made out of maple syrup?
Yeah. I'll go for the spaghetti hair, I think. It's not that sticky.
Come on, kids. Time for dinner. Snip.
Yeah. Snip, snip.
Yeah.
Pasta again, Dad. Hey, you got a carbo load.
Unlimited supply, kids. Unlimited supply. See you tomorrow.
He's the Olive Garden. If you had the power to shrink anything and take it with you, what would that one thing be?
Oh. Yeah. Well, sometimes it would be nice to. Yeah, you could go anywhere and bring your home with you. That would be very...
Yeah.
Nice.
Not that frightening, though. Yeah.
For me, the whole home thing is great until you realize you need a place to put it. Like that's always the thing I get into is like, oh, what am I going to do with this, though? Like, where am I going to pop it? You know?
Right. And then, like, it's like the Ant-Man conundrum. Like,
right.
are all the things bolted down in the things he shrinks? Like, he shrinks the lab down, but he tilts it in a little, like, go away like attaché case.
Yeah.
Doesn't all the shit just fall off everything?
I don't know. That's
how does that work?
We need to ask Mr. Man, Mr. Ant Man.
Some clarity on that shit.
We do. All right. Now it is time for the traditional last question.
Oh, this is it.
The traditional last question. This is a question that all of our guests get. And it is probably the most difficult question it's the most important for sure. How difficult it is really up to you. We've seen it destroy relationships when we've had multiple people on the show. It has certainly destroyed Andy and I's relationship because this is a hotly debated topic.
It's made it stronger in a lot of ways.
In some ways. Yeah, sure. In some ways.
Hotly debated.
Hotly debated topic. It's actually, there are both 4chan and Reddit. Yes. Threads completely dedicated to this question. So we hope to add your answer to the pantheon of official canon answers.
Correct.
So Eric, it is a simple question. It is binary. It is a choice of one of two things.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are Andy or Steve.
Oh, I could certainly see how this could ruin your relationship.
And then it dawns on him.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with Andy because he was the one who reached out to me. Yeah,
it's you know what? That's his job. You just picked him because he did his job. His job's to get the guests. My job's to host. And yet here we are. doing the thing, whatever. It's fine. I'll take the L. I'll take the L this time. What am I going to do?
You know, one of the best replies we got from that was, all right, guys, I'll see you next time. Like, all right, great show.
Speaking of good show, that does bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening to everything today. Thank you for watching. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit the thumbs up, share it with your friends. Let everybody know that we've done like 200 of these. So there are a lot of interviews for you to listen to. If you go into our archives, go to dualscreens.com and go to the guest host page. You can find all of the hosts that we have previously interviewed. And this one was awesome. This is going to be up there with one of our favorites for sure. Eric, thank you so much for being here. Where could everybody find Slowmo? Like give everybody the pitch of where they can chase you down and follow the progress.
Yeah, they could Google Slowmo but maybe write Slowmo NES and they'll find it. And you can download the game for free on the beta version for free on my Patreon page. There's a link so everyone can download it. And I, of course, would be extremely happy if as many as people as possible found the trailer on YouTube and watched it.
Yes, and we'll put the link to the trailer in the description of this show so you guys can watch it and bask in its absolute hilarity and glory.
So good.
Because it's fantastic. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at @dual_screens on Twitter, at @dualscreens on Instagram. I'm at @batchhile27. Andy's at @pantsguy. Our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts. And you can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And I also stream on twitch.tv/batchild. Thank you so much for being here, Eric. It was an absolute pleasure having you here and learning more about Slowmo and yourself. It was great. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. And as always, please be excellent to each other.